No, Mr. Chairman, Representative Barnes, the money is not withheld, it is all transmitted to the state, and that is the level of compensation which these vendors have been reimbursed.
Okay, we have a motion.
I'm gonna have to have my staff get me the statutes on that one.
We have a motion that this be deferred. Are there objections? Hearing none, then so ordered. Next, we come to Representative Wallet.
Go ahead.
The Mariculture Aquatic Farming here for $29,100. Representative Wallace?
Yes, I move we delete 29.1.
Okay, once again, is there anyone who wishes to make a motion in the positive?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Anyone?
Aye.
Hearing none, then this is disapproved. Nothing brought up. Wildlife conservation audit exceptions, amount of $140,000 in general funds and $246,000 in total funds. Briefing.
Mr. Chairman, this is for prior year audit exceptions identified by the Division of Legislative Audit. This would correct the accounting records to properly identify the fund sources from which the funds were expended.
So moved.
Okay, we have a motion by Representative Ulmer. Are there objections? Representative Schultz?
Just a question. I guess you were chairing the budget audit. Were you finding, did you find out that we're not crediting the correct accounts? Our bookkeeping department or bookkeeping department of Fish and Game is, don't know what they're doing when it comes to this or what?
Representative Schultz, I'm sorry, I don't have any recollection at this time. Oh. Someone that can help me on this one?
What? Why did the audit show that? That, I mean, that, what was going on? I mean, were they improperly trained?
Do we have anyone from Fish and Game here that might be able to answer that?
Almost. Okay. Probably. Mr. Chairman, I'm Deborah Rayon. What we found was this actually happened in FY86 when the user accounting system was implemented. And there was a considerable amount of increasing in this one division for coding purposes. And there were a lot of adjustment entries that were done during the course of the year. And I think in some cases they happened more than once. And I just have to say there was a great deal of confusion. And it was not recognized until the audit of FY87 was done and then backtracked to 86. So we've actually picked up a problem with the implementation in the accounting.
Any further discussion on this? Do we have a motion? Are the objections maintained? Are no objections, and so ordered. Next, under miscellaneous claims and stale dated warrants, I see we have a request for an increase of $600. Do we have a motion to adopt?
So moved.
Objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
Aye. Yay. $600.
Close to show. $600 or less, there's no problem.
No problem.
$600.
Go for it.
Schultz Enterprises.
Yeah. That's the way my business operates.
Public safety, violent crime compensation, we have a request for $198.5 in general funds. What action does the committee wish?
I move the number.
And we have a motion by Representative Swackhammer. Are there any objections?
Yes.
Hearing objections, any discussion?
Why?
Mr. Chairman, these are awarded claims that haven't been paid for this year. And
so did we underestimate what it would be for the fiscal year and we're coming back because of the claims being made?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, it's awfully hard to judge what kind of crimes are going to be committed and that sort of thing. So.
Maybe we could pass a law outlawing crime.
Right.
Further discussion. Are the objections maintained? Hearing none, then so ordered. Next, we move to the contract jails prisoner transportation in the amount of $85,000 general funds. What action does the committee wish?
Move the number.
Do we have objections? Representative Phillips.
Short.
This is money that was used to bring the federal prisoners up from...
Oh, Minnesota?
Federal prisoners up to Spring Creek. They came pretty close to what they figured, but...
That's what the contract jails is referring to?
No, sir. No, this was prisoner transportation from contract facilities outside, which were the federal prisons.
Oh, I got you.
I had a picture of those, but...
We were progressive on that, and I remember the contracts, and maybe I'll need some help here. It was costing us about $18,000 to $20,000 a year per prisoner in Minnesota. And it only cost us double that, and now we got them back here. So what action does the committee, are the objections maintained? Hearing none, then so ordered. Next, we have the...
We're in trouble again.
PSEA arbiter's decision in the amount of $460.8 in general funds. What action does the committee wish? Representative Ulmer.
So moved.
Objection.
Hearing objections. Discussion? Any discussion?
Question.
On the question, would the clerk please call the...
Representative Swackham.
No.
Representative Ulmer?
Yes.
Representative Wallace?
No.
Representative Barnes?
I was reading. Which one are we voting on?
The FDA arbitrator's decision.
No.
No.
Brown?
Yes.
Representative Kopanen?
Yes.
Representative Phillips?
No.
Representative Rieger?
No.
Representative Schultz?
No.
Co-Chairman Hoffman?
No.
Co-Chairman Larson?
No.
Three yeas, eight nays.
Please note that the motion failed. Next, we come to environmental conservation, and we have mariculture, aquatic farming. Do we have a motion to adopt? We have a motion to adopt.
I've learned my lesson. You guys don't like mariculture. What can I say?
Okay, no motion. We're going to corrections.
That's not true.
That's not true.
All right, I withdraw that. I take that off the record.
Many of us do support it.
You don't want to spend the money on agriculture.
They may want to spend money, too.
Not this year.
My only feeling is that it's so late in the year to accomplish it to a supplemental that it should be addressed through the fiscal year 90, if that is the legislative position. Corrections. First, we have the arbitration decision in the amount of $658.8. Could we get some briefing on that before we entertain the motion so we know?
Mr. Chairman, this is an arbitrator's decision that was in the appropriation covers fiscal year 87 and fiscal year 88 to provide that there are payment of correction workers for overtime for working lunch hours and...
Yes, I did read that. Do we have a motion, Representative Swackhammer?
Yes, I'll move it and then make some explanation of what was done in subcommittee.
Okay, Representative Swackhammer, we have a motion to adopt then.
This causes a great deal of concern, and the situation that caused this arbiter's award has been corrected, and there will be very limited use of that half hour. Basically, it's one that had already been paid by the administration.
Representative Rieger?
Mr. Chairman, it's been corrected. Do you agree that the arbitrator was correct in making the award?
Well, I didn't use that judgment. I do know that there is a lot of other precedents set by other state employees. Basically, it evolves around the 12-hour working day. And so they've made some adjustments, but the situation went on for a long time. They filed a grievance, and the arbitrator awarded, and they went ahead and paid it, if I'm not mistaken. So we were concerned that didn't reoccur, and we're satisfied that it did, and we feel that the administration acted on good faith, and we just go ahead and go
ahead. Chairman Hoffman?
So you're saying as a result of this, if you go ahead and approve this, there is not going to be additional costs.
other discussion on the motion to adopt? Are the objections maintained?
Yes.
Any discussion? Any none, we call the question.
Representative Ballmer?
Yes.
Representative Wallace?
Yes.
Representative Barnes?
I'm reading again. No.
Representative Brown?
Yes.
Representative Kopanen?
Yes.
Representative Phillips?
No.
Representative Rieger?
Yes.
Representative Schultz?
Yes.
Representative Blackhammer?
Yes.
Co-Chairman Larson?
Yes.
Co-Chairman Hoffman?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, now that I found my place on the page and know what it is I'm voting on instead of talking to mail, I will change my vote from no to yes.
Mm-hmm. One nay.
Next, we come to Major Medical. We have a request of $1,601,004 from general funds. Kind of brief backup.
Mr. Chairman, this is to cover the cost of the medical bills of the prisoners themselves. This is based on bills received to date and a projection through year end.
Okay, we move the number.
I object, Mr. Chairman.
Objection?
I do too. For discussion. Clarification.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, for some time now, we have in my office been working on this question, and I have considerable information on it. There are several problems that is going on with the health care as it relates to the prisoners. Not only the kind of services that they are receiving, but the kind of oversight that is being used in sending these prisoners to see doctors. For example, within inside the prison system, they do not have a published fee as insurance companies do for cost of procedures. For example, if they go to a hospital and the doctor in the hospital say $83,000, they pay $83,000. The person that is in charge of overseeing this is a physician's assistant. He does have doctors that are on call, from what I'm able to tell. The skill level of this person is not what I think it should be for one that is contracting out $7.5 million of public money every year to treat our prisoners, and I recognize that the prisoners are indeed entitled to health care while they're incarcerated, and I would not wish to deny them that, but I do have serious problems with some of the procedures that are being used in the case of the hospital, and whether or not we in fact are going out and contracting with doctors. We aren't doing that. I have so much material here that I'd be glad to share with the committee. I've not got it all together in the form yet to present it to the committee that I intend to. But I have real serious problems with this, the way this whole area is being handled and the kinds of things that are being treated.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Spikehammer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Barnes, there is some merit to her concerns, and this was an item that was looked at in subcommittee, and as a result, if the members will take a look at the big packet of amendments, and I believe it's amendment number 12, there's some backup material that shows you just for the month of February. I think that the subcommittee gave plenty of intention for the Department of Corrections to try to exercise more scrutiny in this area. There is some limitations, however, in terms of making judgments. That was one of the reasons that we put the physician and assistant in for him. Just a real difficult area to deal with, and I know Representative Barnes is sensitive to that. It's just a matter of our feeling that there needs to be more scrutiny by the department. And you have to rely on some medical person to make that judgment before they go to the hospital, and that average cost is you can see, is quite a bit. But we point out the month of February because there has been a marked improvement in the types of people that were, or the types of things that were causing the hospitalization. So all I can tell you is that we'll keep their feet to the fire.
30,000.
Pardon me?
Just in fire.
30,000.
Okay. Well, yeah, it just gives the appearance that there's a pretty significant ripoff here, in my opinion, by the prisoners. What I was wondering, I would like to know what our medical costs are, and I'd just like to have this figure, and you don't have to do it now, but I'd like to have a figure of the medical costs and the number of prisoners in the state of Alaska. I'd like to know on a per prisoner basis. I'm going to do something with this thing one of these days. Anyway, I'd just like to see a cost breakout on that, because I'm just wondering in how we compare with maybe other states as far as providing the medical services, the dental. I mean, are we rebuilding people's mouths while they're there, you know, and doing all these things for them?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Barnes did pick out several and point out to the committee that there were some problems. And that's what I was saying. The other thing, of course, is through the Clery suit and trying to provide that basic medical service. And we see an improvement from the time that we started our meetings in January to the time that we, and the time previous to that. So Representative Barnes has been a one-man or one-person show in keeping this issue alive and well within corrections. So.
Mr. Chairman, Schultz, I'm not through yet.
I was going to remind Mr. Schultz that there is a kind of a breakdown. And I noticed several pregnancy charges. Of course, a couple that stand out is ball obstruction, $70,000.
What? What'd you add?
38 days in the room. Problems that he stuffed in.
There's even one for $17.50 for labor. What type of labor would that be? But I'd like to recognize Representative Barnes.
Well, Mr. Chairman, as I said, one of my staff people just happens to be very skilled in the medical community, having been an operating room nurse. And when she saw some of these cases that we were paying for, she decided not to work on anything else. And let me just read this one. Case listed on typed report as bunion bunectomy. Estimated cost $5,500. Inmate class, minimum security. Remand 788, release 1189. Problem, inmate had developed serious bunion growth that had to displace the bone of her foot. Practitioners involved in decision, P.A. Nels, something and other, P.A. J. Henley, Dr. Scott Keister, D.O., and Dr. Christopher Horton, M.D., action. This was considered a serious medical situation. Surgery was required to correct the situation and alleviate the pain. The problem I have with some of these things is that we've got people walking around out there on the street with a lot more serious problems than some of these that are turning up in here, and what we're paying in actual cost for them. I believe that we need to completely redo this whole system and require them to go to insurance companies, get posted fees of how much the insurance companies pay for medical procedures, make sure that we have somebody other than a PA overseeing this type of work that is going on. And when a PA recommends that they go or stay, I mean, it's virtually gone, you know, and we just write a check and hand it out. And I have real serious problems with that.
Yeah, there are cost containment measures, one of which is, you know, second opinion on some of these. And the other
is to agree to use essentially the diagnostic payment units that are used in Medicaid as a basis for our projection, and then if necessary, negotiate. But that could be done in conjunction with the health and social services, because we do limit Medicaid payments in that manner, and this is a federal payment schedule. The hospitals complain about it, but nevertheless, within, I noticed some of these payments are less than one would normally expect, and others, I noticed that some of them were less than actual cost, because they got billed for higher. But I mean, some of the MI is myocardial infarction, in other words, a heart attack. So there's some fairly serious things here, including the gentleman who hung himself, and that's DOA. He was only one day in the hospital. But in other words, there are procedures. I don't see how you get away from paying past bills, but perhaps the representative Blackhammer, have you discussed this with the department? Are they using some sort of payment schedule prospectively, something like Health and Social Services uses? Is there any possibility that they might adopt something like that? If they can do it by regulation.
Yeah. We can look at that. You know, we looked at the cost care that Representative Schultz looked at. It doesn't appear to be out of line, but at the same time, it's just one of those things that are really difficult to get a handle on. We'll look at that area.
But I mean, in general, it seems to be the case. I mean, the general case is, you know, when you're in the swamp up to your ass, and you forget about draining the swamp. There's too many things happening.
Okay, are the objections maintained?
Yes.
Okay, objections are maintained.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to continue to object until they have some kind of a posted fee, till they have doctors that say they're going to stick to these fees, something to contain this cost. We talk about containing health care costs for employees of this state, and we're working to that end. On the other hand, we have an agency that has no cost containment whatsoever, and to the tune of $7.5 million last year. Something has got to be done about it, and I'm not going to vote to give them another dime until they do something about it.
One of the problems is the Constitution says, you know, that our prisons are for rehabilitation. I don't know, when someone gets sentenced to life for 99 years or 366 years, I don't know if rehabilitation is going to do them any good.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I may, the case that they used for their medical care was Wade Rust versus State, and it had absolutely nothing to do with medical care. It has physical medical care. It has to do with psychological care. And they're basing all their expenditures on that case. And we have it, and we've read it, and their interpretation of it, in my opinion, is wrong.
Representative Wallace?
Yes. Do we have any legal obligations? I mean, what is going to be our obligations if we don't fund this?
Mr. Chairman, they have already sent around bill collectors, because most of this money is in arrears. This is money that's already been expended. This is not future money.
If we don't comply, the courts are going to rule that we have to comply, and then they're going to send us a bill for a suit, and we'll pay for both sides.
Within
Representative Hoffman.
Well, I guess I would concur with many of the remarks that Representative Barnes had, and instead of fully funding this, I would rather take some amount off so that the department will further scrutinize any potential health care requests that come before them. And I think unless this amount is somewhat reduced, I would have to vote no on this appropriation.
In other situations, we have passed timely payment legislation setting a certain rate of interest on which states will pay for unpaid bills. This is a case of unpaid bills. I don't know how. I mean, we have bound ourselves to pay our bills early, and here we're bitching about the bills.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I may, it's not all for unpaid bills. They have part of this is based on their expected expenditure through the end of the year, fiscal year.
We have the motion to adopt. Are there any objections? Are the objections maintained?
Yes.
Objections are maintained. I hear a motion to amend.
Mr. Chairman, I would move to amend a reduction of $51,400 from this appropriation.
$601.4
We can remove $51,400 from this appropriation.
$51,601.
This is
the
new number right here. 1551.4
Okay, we have a motion to amend that instead of 1,601.4 thousand, that it be 1,551.4 Are there objections to the motion to amend?
Well, that's not very much.
How did we come up with 51.4?
Just send a message.
Hangnails.
Okay.
1,550. Okay. Hearing no objections, then the motion to amend has passed. Now, on the main motion as amended.
I still object.
Representative Wallace?
Yes.
Representative Barnes?
No.
Representative Brown?
Yes.
Representative Kopanen?
Yes.
Representative Phillips?
No.
Representative Rieger?
No.
Representative Schultz?
No.
Representative Swackhammer?
Yes.
Representative Ballmer?
Yes.
Co-Chairman Hoffman?
Yes.
Co-Chairman Marston?
No.
68, 5
names. Please note, the motion has passed. Next, we come to the Clery Monitor request for $20,000 in general fund. Motion to move the number. Any discussion?
Yes.
Okay. Update.
Mr. Chairman, the Clery Monitor was budgeted for 6 months. It was extended by the court. This pays for the remainder of the remaining six months of the fiscal year in fiscal year 89.
Is this mandated by the court?
Yes, it is.
Just a brief, what is the Clery Monitor?
Thank you.
Yes, Representative Swackhammer.
Under the Clery suit, under the settlement, instead of the, in many states, the states have taken over, or the judge has taken over the operation of the correctional institution. It was negotiated where the court appointed a monitor to report back to the court that compliance with the Clery suit was being upheld to the court's satisfaction. It was, in my opinion, that was one of the few good things that came out of the Clery suit. And basically what the monitor does is report back the compliance by the Department of Corrections to the courts that it's satisfying the negotiated agreements. And it's our hopes that within the next couple of years that the court will do away with the monitor, that they'll feel comfortable enough that the state's compliant under the suit.
Chairman, can I do a hypothetical?
I wonder if the Clery Monitor should be something that more properly be under the court budget.
Mr. Chairman, I'd love for it to be out of my budget, but the truth is that the billing procedure would go through the Department of Corrections. That's the court is charging the department to perform that function. So that's. But if Fran wants the money, she's welcome to it.
I'm sure the court system would object.
I was thinking of moving the job without the money. Do we have any objections to the motion that we approve the Clery Monitor? Any objection? Seeing none, then so ordered. Next, we go to Representative Wallace.
Did you want amendments at the end, or was I to... We have money, APCA money, that's being held within the department that is their money until they incorporate it. It's some trust, land trust money. Do you want the amendment at this time, or shall I wait?
Yeah, it'll be later. We'll take it. What we're going to try to do is get through amendment number one today.
Okay. And
it would be, it would also be our
3 hours later.
Station that we're going to adjourn the meeting at 4:45. And I would suspect then that, depending upon how things go on House Bill 100 tomorrow, that we will probably reconvene for both House Bill 100 and 154 on Saturday. And it would be my expectation that we would probably start either at 9 or 10 in the morning and go till about 3, because I know Chairman Hoffman would also like to have a meeting on House Bill 220, which has to do with the leaking underground storage tanks on Saturday. So, and then what we don't do on Saturday, we will try to do on Sunday.
So, Sunday?
Yes.
No problem.
Okay. We will need all the help we can get by then. Okay, transportation and public facilities. We have the State Equipment Fleet Vendors Payment, 614.4. What is the request to the committee? Representative Ulmer?
I move that we accept 614.4 as requested.
Object. Hearing objections, explanation?
Mr. Chairman, this appropriation request is for unpaid bills of the to the State Equipment Fleet. The effect of the bills not being paid as the rates are built, anticipating a certain level of payment, is that it will in future cause either underfund or undercapitalize the working capital fund, or have to be recouped through an increase in rates assessed to all users. This was a route that the department chose to take at a time when they discovered that they did not have sufficient funds to pay all vendors. And they chose not to pay their own equipment fleet as opposed to having other people hanging out.
That's okay. Representative Schultz.
So in other words, how much of this is M&O? It's all M&O owes this to the equipment fleet. Which would lead me to believe that as we look into this, that we're underfunding M&O again.
We're not underfunded.
If they got rentals and if they got state equipment, on the state equipment, if their equipment they're using, and they do not have money enough to pay their rentals, or hourly rate or whatever, then we're not funding them enough in the M&O department, I would guess.
Okay, Chairman Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Allison, is there any of these payments as a result of other departments not paying DOT or DOT itself not paying the state equipment fee?
Mr. Chairman, these are payments that are owed by the Department of Transportation to the equipment fleet. They are the heaviest user of the equipment fleet.
Have all the departments that were charged for the state equipment fleet account been paid by those departments?
Mr. Chairman, perhaps I could ask Deputy Commissioner Simmons to join me at the table. He could respond to these questions.
Mr. Chairman, Randy Simmons, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Transportation. In answer to your question, Co-Chair Hoffman, no, not all the departments have paid the bill.
Which, can we, before we act on this, can we ask that which departments have not paid the charges that the department has charged?
I can get a list of the departments that have not paid.
I'd request that
Would it not make sense, Mr. Chairman, to take, as we look at the various departments that have not paid, and what they owe the equipment fleet. If we turned around and deducted that from the departments, paid the equipment fleet, and then turn around the next time around and either increase the departments by the appropriate amount to ensure that they're going to pay the equipment fleet what they owe them, increase the M&O, and we could turn around and deduct that same amount from the state equipment fleet, could we not? It should be a zero balance, so we can get this whole thing in line.
Okay.
I think that's something we can look at next year.
Representative Wallace?
May we request not only the departments at all, but the amounts?
Yes.
The motion that we still have officially before us is that we approve the request for 14.4. Representative Wallace and then Phillips.
Are we going to put this on hold for the information?
Okay, we have a motion that we defer action on this. Are there objections to that motion? It should be deferred then. Navy home courting. Do we have a motion that we adopt? Do we have a motion? Hearing none then, we'll move to the next. Disadvantaged business enterprises. Request for 298.6 in general funds. Do we have a motion?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Do we have a motion? Discussion? Any explanation?
Explanation, please.
For the request?
Okay, and about the end of May 1988, the federal government did its annual assurance on the disadvantaged business external EEO program, which is handled within DOT, and they found out of the seven areas that six of them were in substantial non-compliance. They gave us approximately 1 month to come up with a plan to get back into compliance and 3 months total to totally get back into substantial compliance. What we did at that point in time is we identified, we put together a short-term and a long-term plan. The short-term was to get us back into compliance, the long-term was to make sure that we would stay in compliance. There are a number of employees in DOT, a handful I should say, probably about 10, who understand how the program works because it's based, it's a contract program. For us to get our federal monies, we have to comply with the federal government's regulations. So what we did is after we put the plan together, we identified people who were located throughout the state in the department, and we basically had them come to Anchorage in between doing their other duties where the program was located to put that plan into effect. In the three-month period, we were able to get back into substantial compliance. As to the long-term plan, we have gotten the backlog and certifications, which was up to a year and a half, down to 60 days as of, I believe, 2 months ago, and we're working on it to get it down to 30 days. The reason we took this action again is that the Federal Highway Administration sent us a letter that said that if we did not get into compliance, that we could find ourselves being sanctioned, which means losing federal funds for our construction projects.
But it.
Representative Rieger?
Mr. Chairman, sounds like you did a good job, got the people, got yourself into compliance, but you used existing staff, and I'm not sure I understand why we need a supplemental.
Supplemental, the existing staff we used were CIP funded people, a lot of them. They were construction people, like people who work on the construction side that work within the program to go out and make sure that the contractors are complying. There's two different sections. One is to this part, the DB, is where you go out and actually certify minority or women businesses. That's the biggest piece of it. We do support to where we go out and help minority businesses become certified by putting on programs, helping them understand how to get certified, fill out the paperwork, do bookkeeping, that type of thing. So the people who we brought in were CIP-funded people itself.
So while they were working on this project, you don't want to charge those capital projects?
You can't charge capital projects.
Well, I think maybe I like this because
preserve some capital dollars. I guess maybe I'm in favor of this after all.
You can't pay it for with capital dollars.
Thank you.
Representative, we have a motion to move it. Representative Barnes?
Isn't this the section of the budget in House Bill 100 where their EEO budget is larger than the governor's budget and the governor's EEO office takes care of the rest of the state and they have their own little fiefdom down there?
That's correct.
Then I'm opposed to this.
Do we have further discussion? Are the objections maintained?
Yes.
Please call the roll.
Representative Barnes?
No.
Representative Brown?
No.
Representative Kopanen?
Yes.
Representative Phillips?
No.
Representative Rieger?
Yes.
Representative Schultz?
Yes.
Representative Swackhammer?
No.
Representative Ulmer?
Yes.
Representative Wallace?
Yes.
Pro Chairman Hoffman?
Yes.
Pro Chairman Larson?
Yes.
7 yeas, 4 nays.
Okay, please note the motion has been adopted. Next is the Fairbanks office billing estimate 334.4. What action does the committee wish?
Move the number.
Okay, we have a motion to move the number. Discussion. We have objections.
Question.
We'll get an explanation here on what it is.
Mr. Chairman, this is for maintenance and improvements to the Fairbanks office building. In reviewing this before, the committee had expressed some reservation about the capital portion of this appropriation. I would point out that 231.3 of this is for capital improvements, and those costs have not yet been incurred.
Chairman Hoffman?
How much, again, was requested in the capital budget?
This is not presently contained in the capital budget, but was for capital costs that were not incurred.
No, in the capital budget. Do we have a figure in the capital budget?
I don't believe that there's a specific appropriation for this building in the capital budget other than just our regular maintenance for buildings. Generic appropriation.
Does it belong there?
We're looking for information.
Is there not a capital budget for the cost building?
Okay, any further discussion on the motion?
Why don't we just approve that? What's it for?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Representative.
Why don't we defer that until we get the additional information as to why it wasn't included in the capital?
Yeah, are there objections to deferring this? Maintenance and operations, snow removal, an estimate of $1,932.2. We have a motion. That. Motion by Representative Schultz.
To do what?
For maintenance and operations, snow removal, $1,932.2. Any discussion? Are there objections?
Well, yes, Mr. Chairman, I want to find out.
Do we have objections? Any information that can be provided by anyone? Any information? Representative Phillips?
I'd like to hear the explanation. I mean, it's the administration's offering it. I don't have the information. They have to justify it to me.
Mr. Chairman, this supplemental is requested as a result of the extreme cold weather and heavy snowfalls that the state has been experiencing throughout this winter. The original estimate was increased because of the continued snowfall that's being experienced, particularly in the Northwest, and it has forced the department, winter started earlier and has continued later, and has forced the department to maintain winter crews much over a much longer period of time than was budgeted.
In addition to that, we had a period of time there where there was a large accumulation of snow and high winds, and many of the projects where they could go out and plow and had the snow removal, it was on a constant basis because they could not keep the roads open. I think they had a terrible time in Thompson Pass, I believe, keeping that thing open, and some high winds in excess of 100 knots or whatever. So there was some substantial costs as a result of extreme cold, wind, exceptional amount of snowfall.
You Representative Phillips and then Wallace?
Well, I just wanted to find out what the total budget for FY89 was for operation maintenance.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask Keith Gerken to join me if I might.
And also would like to know what the price was for FY88 as well.
Mr. Chairman, Keith Gerken, Deputy Commissioner. I can't tell you exactly, if I understand your question, it is what is the total highways and aviation maintenance budget?
In the airport.
$7 million for the state?
$17 million.
And how much was it for 88?
I believe it was about $3 or $4 million less than
Representative Wallace?
Oh, Mr. Chairman, yes, I answered my question with the airport funeral.
Okay. Any further discussion? Representative Phillips.
What was the request for this year?
The governor's 90 request. Basically, the 89 request with the usual health benefits increments and two increments for state equipment fleet rate increases and new facilities, which add about $1.5 million to the adjusted 89 base.
Okay, Chairman Hoffman?
I might note that there's a substantial portion, just about $250,000 of the increase on the supplement was for the Dalton Highway area, and we did recommend that there would be a so hopefully in the future some of these costs would be deferred when that program is implemented.
And when we're talking here about the maintenance and operation, we have the governor's total amendment and amendment number one. What figures are we talking about here? What is the request? Is it the 1.9 or is it the 1.37?
Mr. Chairman, the total request is $1,932,000, based on the amended information we presented the committee. In your original committee substitute, you had included the initial request of $795,000.
Okay, so this would be to increase the original request another 1.13. Further discussion? Representative Rieger.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, looking at the backup, it looks like there's something like, and I don't know if I'm reading this right, the high estimate and the low estimate. So this supplemental is based on the high estimate of what would be needed.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I believe if you're looking at our first request for this, where the we estimated about $1.9 million or $2 million, that was back in February or March. And we were asking for the smaller number because those were our additional costs to that point in time. At this point in time, we now know that in many areas of the state, the winter not only maintains that same trend line in terms of the amount of snow and extra work, but in some areas actually accelerated beyond that. So we essentially, the Mother Nature essentially got us to our high number.
Did it do that in all regions of the state? I mean, I know it's been kind of balmy down here.
Mr. Chairman, no, it did not, and that's why we've shown by the different components what the actual differences between the original supplemental request and the amended request were. You're right, for instance, in Southeast, the second half of the winter was much less severe than the first half of the winter. The exactly opposite has been true in parts of the western part of the state, and in some areas in the interior, even though the snowfall was not increased, the amount of wind and blowing and work to keep roads open was considerably greater than it had been in the first place.
Okay, are we ready for the question? Yeah. The objections maintained.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, hearing maintained, will you please call the roll?
Representative Brown?
No.
Representative
Copeland? Yes.
Representative Phillips? Representative
Rieger?
No.
Representative Schultz?
Yes.
Representative Swackhammer?
Yes.
Representative Ulmer?
Yes. Representative Wallace?
Yes.
Representative Barnes?
No, voting in.
Co-Chairman Larson?
No.
Co-Chairman Hoffman?
Yes.
6 yeas, 4 nays.
Okay, please note that the motion has passed, and we're going to stop there today. What we have to do then, we'll come back until on Saturday, along with House Bill 100, if we're not done with House Bill 100 tomorrow. And, we have many things that took us a long time today, simply because we had to defer. Lack of information, and so forth. So I would also request everyone, including myself, try to bring ourselves briefing, and I would also request, of course, that anything that was deferred, why don't we just number it in the order in which it was deferred, like we'll start under the governor's office, the Finfish Farming Task Force, that was deferred, if the department still wishes to make a request, have that item number one in their packet, and so on and so forth. But before we get to the deferred items, I'd also like to then start from where we left off, go back to the deferred items, finish up amendment number one.
Sure.
I'd like to do that in an orderly manner, and things that we don't have information on, things that we lack background information on, things that no one's in the audience from the department to give testimony on, we will not consider. Representative Schultz.
Dan, I just had a question I wanted to ask Allison. And I just want to go back on this deal on the food stamps. Mm-hmm. That was a lawsuit, okay? And this is a payment for a settlement of that lawsuit?
It is the first...
First installment.
First installment.
How many people filed a lawsuit? I mean, was there 10, 20, 50? It was what? But what the number of people? Okay, the reason I'm asking you, are we paying these people, if they're going to be getting money, they should be, their names should be taken down, because we for damn sure don't want to be giving them food stamps in the future. If they're getting several hundred thousand dollars, or if there's 50 of them and they're getting $20,000 a piece or whatever, I would just make sure that they're not on the food stamp list anymore. What, I mean, does that make sense to you?
Yeah, but I don't think that's what happened in this case.
Oh. They're not getting the money? They're getting the food stamps?
By the way, meeting adjourned.
Oh, so it's not a lawsuit for some people. Now, the way I understand
for another individual for attorney fees, there's $60,000 for appraisers of 100 man days, and I don't know if that's anticipated work. But the biggest concern that I have is that we're going to be prepaying some expenses to the attorneys from this date to June 30th of 89, and we don't know how much dollars there are, but it's $120,000 from January 1.
We have a quorum present. We're able to conduct business, so at this time we will call the meeting to order. On the agenda today, we have four pieces of legislation. We'll work through till approximately 9:45. They are House Bill 85, 119, 195, and 227. The first one then is HB 95. It's an act relating to financial administration of state government, the provisions of and charges for state services, and the accounting for and disposition of state receipts, provided for an effective date, and sponsored by the Rules Committee by request of the governor. This bill is back before us, I think, on the third occasion at this time. The purpose today is simply to address a couple of amendments that have been proposed at our last meeting. As you know, at our last meeting, we did go through and we adopted four amendments. Amendment number one had been an amendment by Representative Rieger. Amendment number two by Representative Brown had also been adopted. Amendment number three by Representative Brown and Rieger was adopted as amended. And amendment number four by Representative Barnes was adopted. And then time ran out. We were talking about amendment number five to House Bill 85. And that also was by Representative Rieger. And it's my understanding at this time that amendment has been typed out.
Which? Oh.
If not.
No, it's not typed out. I think it's legible.
And amendment number six came to us on a memorandum from the Department of Education dated April the 11th, 1989. So, at this time, I'd like to recognize Representative Rieger for consideration of adopting amendment number five into what is now becoming the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 85. Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment number five, ask unanimous consent.
I'll object just for the purposes of discussion here. Did you wish to speak on it, Representative Rieger?
Mr. Chairman, the place where this appears in House Bill 85 is in a section which exempts a particular class of user fees from the limit that we put into the bill as a general policy that user fees should not exceed the full cost of providing the service. So what this list is a list of exempted areas. They aren't exempted from a fee, they're exempted from the limit on the fee. And this would put access to wildlife refuges back under the limit that the cost, that the fee cannot exceed the cost of providing that access. And in the one case of a wildlife refuge where there's concern that perhaps the fee at this point exceeds the cost, there also is a grandfather clause that again is generic, which means that no fee would be rolled back in the meantime.
Okay. Committee wish any additional discussion in relation to amendment number five? Representative Barnes.
I do have one question, Mr. Chairman. A wildlife refuge, would you define that as one where, say, big game guides could go hunting?
Mr. Chairman, I think I brought a brochure which lists refuges. I can't answer your question because I don't know the answer, but they're in here. I'd be glad to give this to you. Alaska Special Areas.
Is there any other discussion then in relation to number five?
Mr. Chairman, if that be the case then with the exclusive areas for guides no longer existing, then my understanding is that if they had exclusive use areas prior to the Supreme Court ruling in wildlife refuge or on state or federal land, that they would then be grandfathered in, and they would be able to use that area, and if a lot of other people applied for permits, they would not get a permit. So I have a problem if, in fact, we're setting it up where big game guides can use these areas exclusively through a use permit and pay a limited fee.
Further discussion? Yes, Representative Brown.
I was just wondering if did the department propose this language, and was there some specific refuge they anticipated wanting to charge a fee for, or does the sponsor know? Or is there anyone from the department that could speak to that?
Do we have anyone from the department who wish to speak? We could hear from Mr. Hogan, though. Jay?
Chairman Jay Hogan, House Finance Staff. This was a suggestion brought forward by the Department of Education, and it seemed reasonable to make it clear in the bill that grants from individuals, corporations, private foundations should not be considered a program, a general fund program receipts, because they usually all come with particular projects or strings attached. So this would simply add this category of receipt to the non-general fund list that is in the definition section of the bill.
Okay, that would be amendment number six, but...
Mr. Chairman, I think that... Yeah, that helps confuse the issue.
We're on wildlife refuge?
Right.
We're on wildlife refuge. Yeah, I'm sorry. Any more discussion on the amendment number five to the elite access to wildlife refuge as it appears on page 11, line 26? Are the objections maintained there? Okay, no objections then. Amendment number five has been adopted. Now, we appreciate your explanation in relation to amendment number six. And it deals, as Jay said, with gifts, bequests, grants to the state from private sources. Is there any... Amendment number six... And in the upper left-hand corner, you will see the exact words for the amendment.
Move the amendment.
Okay, we have a motion to move the amendment, so we'll object for purposes of discussion here. And Jay, would you go through an explanation again, please?
Mr. Chairman, I had one prepared for wildlife refuges, but I think I'll stick to the subject. Listed here are four particular nonprofit or corporate grants that various functions of the Department of Education receive. And their concern was, and I know this applies to the university as well and to Fish and Game and other places, there are numerous situations throughout the budget where private individuals, nonprofit foundations, or corporations give grants for specific purposes. You accept the conditions of the grant with the receipt of the grant, and you do exactly what the grant is proposed for. So there's no latitude to shift that to some other purpose. And it seems reasonable to include the language of the proposed amendment to make it clear that these grants, gifts, or bequests are not classed with the general fund program receipts and are specifically listed in the definition section as the non-general fund program receipts. That's what this amendment would do.
And the exact amendment would be on page one, between lines 3 and 4, you'd add three, individuals, foundations, or corporation gifts, grants, or bequests. Representative Brown?
Well, page one, between lines 3 and 4 on my work draft, is still in the legislature of the state of Alaska.
Okay.
So I'm still having trouble figuring out where we are, where this goes.
Okay. Can we identify it on our new substitute here?
Mr. Chairman, this was done for the original bill, I believe. I don't have a copy of the committee substitute with me, but in the definition of program receipts,
it's still there in the original bill. It's on lines 3 and 4. You're just in the title of the bill.
Yeah.
Definition starts at the bottom of page one.
Right. It'd be page two, then between lines 3 and 4. Insert a new section 3. Right after University of Alaska receipts. So one would be federal receipts, two would be University of Alaska receipts, three would be individual foundation or corporation grants, gifts, or bequests, and then the string of specific fund sources.
Okay. further discussion? Are the objections maintained? Are the objections maintained? Okay, hearing none, then, amendment number 6 has been adopted. We have a new amendment number 7 by Representative Swackhammer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Lieutenant Governor brought this to my office a couple of days ago. In the meantime, taking a look, the Lieutenant Governor is recommending a fee increase of $20 to the present notary public commission fees, and basically in calculations that this would produce enough program receipts to fully fund that function in Woodsell for several years to pass our the amendment.
Okay, do we have objections? Representative Phillips?
Sure, question. Chairman, I think it was about 3 or 4 years ago, this, obviously, I guess it didn't pass, but we had a similar bill. I think it was Gruenberg that had it, and it passed. What happened to it? It just apparently didn't get passed through the Senate. Okay, I just want to know history. Mila seems to know.
I have a question. Is a legislator or a legislative staffer a state employee for purposes of this? I remember using Senator Ziegler's office for things that had to be notarized while he was around. I believe that they are.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Brown.
With respect to the last sentence of the second part of this amendment, the annual estimated balance may be used by the legislature. Isn't that understood? I guess it sort of bothers me because it implies that it can only be used for that. And I know I've seen language scattered around like that, but just generally seems to me we don't need to be saying that. That it's obvious that the legislature can use the general fund program receipts in whatever way it chooses to. And I don't see that we need that last sentence.
Okay.
So I don't know how the maker feels about that, but
so let's get a response, and then we'll see if we have interest in the motion to amend.
Right, Mr. Chairman, I'm not familiar with the rest of the statutes, but that's the total intent. In other words, to raise the fee is to make sure that we're offsetting the cost of performing that program, and it would be my desire to leave it in so that it's very clear what the legislative intent is for that, because as a bureaucrat at one time, it just seemed like there were all kinds of program receipts and never received the funding to carry out the program.
Representative Rieger?
Mr. Chairman, I agree with Representative Swackhammer. I think that the reason it's throughout the statutes is to show the legislative intent that the program receipts are intended to be used that way, but not to... The permissive word may is to give deference to the dedicated funds questions and so on.
Representative Brown?
Well, if they're roughly breaking even now at 20 and we double it, are we implying that we want to double the size of this department or that they're somehow entitled to use that money?
Mr. Chairman, the cost is between $90,000 and $95,000 a year, and at $20, it's approximately $60,000 is what the cost of the program. So, I mean, we could keep going through this and raise it every year, but it is a source of revenue, number one, and number two, that it would take care of funding this program for several years to come. And I don't think $40 is reasonable for another public.
I think those fees are good for 5 years, aren't they? Representative Phillips?
Well, that was one area I marked. It's probably 6 of 1, half a dozen another in that last sentence. Schwag, when you talk to the Lieutenant Governor, what bothers me, we're putting the dollar amount in statutes. Can't we leave it up to him to regulations to bump it? So we don't have to be faced with this year in and year out dealing with this.
It's been $20, no?
Oh, I know, it's been a long time. That's what I'm saying.
And the $20 has been in statute.
Right. Well, I'm saying, can't we, I guess the question is, have you discussed that aspect with the Lieutenant Governor's office, with having it done through regulation and given them the authority to bump it?
Mr. Chairman, Randy, I don't think that you can get there from here doing that. I don't think there's a vehicle to do that.
Representative Donnelly, then Rieger, then Kopanen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was the chair of the subcommittee of state affairs that worked on this legislation. This particular, the original proposal had some of the thoughts that Representative Phillips was just discussing. The problem was that we felt in state affairs there were certain fees that we felt the legislature should keep a grip on, because we'll be the ones that get blamed for them if they go sky high. And the State Affairs Committee intentionally wanted the legislature to maintain control over this particular fee, just to give you some of the thoughts of previous committee hearings. The testimony then was that the $20 was just, they were just about breaking even on the $20. I think they've since reassessed that, and now they're not quite up, you know, have enough programming fees to pay for what they're doing, and this would push them up there.
I don't have a problem with the amendment. I just want to...
$37 short.
Representative Brown?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'd call the members' attention to page 20, line 11, where we're deleting from the current statute similar language. This is DNR pipeline right-of-way leasing. The annual estimated balance may be used by the legislature to make appropriations. Again, on page 24, line 22, we're taking out the same sentence. The annual estimated balancing account may be used by the legislature. And I think that here we're, yeah, that's the Department of Environmental Conservation. So it seems to me that by adopting this language, we're taking an inconsistent position with how we're approaching the rest of this bill. So I'll move to delete the last sentence of Representative Swackhammer's amendment.
Okay, we have the motion to amend the amendment by deletion of the last sentence. Discussion on that portion. Representative Phillips.
Well, if this amendment passes, Mr. Chairman, the other avenue that I would suggest is probably letter intent.
Any further discussion? Are there objections to the motion to amend? Any objections? Hearing none, then the motion to amend has been adopted. Back to the main motion now as amended. Do we have any further discussion? Do we have any objections? Hearing none, adopted. Are you able to get all of that? Yes, Representative Trump.
Are we going to take up the APUC proposed amendment with the letter that's in our packet?
We can do that at this time if you would like.
Mr. Chairman,
I'll call that amendment number 8 for identification purposes.
I would move that we adopt amendment number 8, which is on page 19, line 23, suggested by the Attorney General to the APUC authorizing language. So it would read, the department may charge a reasonable fee consistent with the criteria in 4205-251 for a permit issued under this section. Ask unanimous consent.
Do I hear any objections? Any objections? Hearing none, then so ordered. Anything else on House Bill 85 today? Is there anything else that would be needed on this bill today, Jay? Mr. Regas.
Mr. Chairman, not on the bill per se, but Finance Committee may wish to look at a fiscal note to the bill which amends parts of House Bill 100, changing some of the general fund appropriations to user fee program receipt authorization. And that would in effect change some of the funding sources for House Bill 100 if in fact House Bill 85 passes both houses. So if this is in order, maybe we should retain the fiscal note and work on it while the House Bill 85 goes forward.
Any other comments, Representative?
Are you suggesting, is Representative Breeder suggesting that we would show program receipt authority in the fiscal note or an increase to revenues in the fiscal note?
I think what he's suggesting is that if House Bill 85 passes, that the way some of the things would be identified in House Bill 100 because of the increase possibility now of additional program receipts, that it would reduce the general fund portion but increase the general fund program receipt portion of the fiscal note. Is that correct?
That's correct.
In other words, it's going to have program receipts offsetting some of the general funds in House Bill 100.
Well, Mr. Chairman, wouldn't we be dealing with that in House Bill 100? Or how, I guess I'm confused, how does the fiscal note affect that?
Well, you just asked us to be able to identify what the results might be.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, fiscal notes do affect House Bill 100, assuming House Bill 100 is the final vehicle. It's they add or subtract from the bill if legislation passes, and assuming the Conference Committee incorporates the fiscal note.
Any other discussion on House Bill 85? Bill is alive and well, but it's not our intent to move to the committee at this time.
This is a human interest story. I guess it affects all of us, but I tried to apply to be a notary and found out that it's unconstitutional because you're holding dual offices. So I thought I'd mention that to you.
So you saved from the $40.
The members bar.
I mean, I had to seek a legal opinion. No, can't do.
Maybe it shouldn't be registered.
Any other? Our next bill on the agenda today is House Bill 119,
a lawyer.
What's that?
An act relating to area cost differential for school districts and providing for an effective date. The last time we had this bill in committee, we did add one amendment. And before we start testimony today, I would move that we rescind our action in having adopted amendment number one and ask for unanimous consent.
I'll object.
Hearing objections, do we have any discussion? Okay, on the question, we call the question to rescind our action on adopting number one.
Representative Kopanen?
Yes.
Representative Phillips?
No.
Representative Rieger?
Yes.
Representative Schultz?
No.
Representative Swafford? No. Representative Ulmer? Yes. Representative Barnes? Yes. Representative Brown? Yes. Chairman Hawkins? Yes. Chairman Larson? Yes. Please note, then, that we have rescinded our action in adopting amendment number one. At this time, then, I'd like to recognize Mr. Johnny Sackett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The bill that you have before you is an attempt to look at what the true costs of providing education is throughout the geographical regions in the state. And it's based upon primarily one study that was passed in 1985, which was a cost of living differential done by the same group that did this last study, the McDowell Report. Prior to going into the study, I'd like to just give you a little background history of the last 3 years and how this came about. In 1985, McDowell did a study throughout the state for a cost of living differential, which they provided to the state of Alaska. A bill was introduced 2 years ago, and I believe it is a House bill, that put the area costs of differences of providing education based upon that study. And you have to recognize that a cost of living is not the same thing as the cost of providing an education differential. But in any event, that was what was before us, and that was what passed 2 years ago. At the time, I had real grave concerns about the premise by which the cost of providing education throughout the state was based upon. And so during the last week of the legislature, I met with Senator Binkley and also with Governor Cooper. I believe Allison Elgee was at the meeting also. And he agreed to recommend putting in $200,000 into the budget by which a true cost of providing education differential could be provided or worked on and provided to the legislature. That was done again using the same group by which we had problems to begin with in their basic premises. However, that's before us, and I'd like to show you by going into the report just what the problems are. As you look at how much it costs to provide education throughout the state versus what the cost of living is throughout the state. And there are some premises that are made by the McDowell Report which I believe are very erroneous, which skew the report in such a manner as to make at least a couple percentage difference one way or the other, but it's for you to make that determination. This last report that the McDowell did, which is November 88, takes all of the data that they collected in 1985, and they say that specifically under methodology, district cost of living differentials were calculated by disaggregating and reorganizing the massive data that they had from 1985. In 1985, and you'll find on page 23 of the 1988 report, personnel costs, which do make up a high percentage of the cost that we have to provide education throughout the state, are weighed and given a certain weight for the various types of costs that exist throughout the household of every individual that works for, say, a school district. For example, in Anchorage, housing is weighed at 34.34. However, housing is much less in Fairbanks, which is they give it a 32 weight, and take Alaska Gateway as one school district, they give it a weight of 29. The reason for that is that the assumption that the people in the McDowell Group made was that Anchorage has higher mortgages and buy larger and more costly homes than they do in Fairbanks or than they do in Tolk and in the Gateway District. That is an assumption, and that is a weight that they provided to it. And as you look throughout the districts, as a result of giving it a greater weight, it skews the whole thing. I don't believe that the cost of housing in Anchorage for their teachers are any greater than the cost of housing for the teachers in Fairbanks or the teachers in Tolk. The assumption was is that in the rural districts, housing is more log cabins and people own their houses. That may have been true 10 or 15 years ago, but it's not true today. We have a loan program out there. These are teachers for the most part that are brought in. They have to pay the high cost like every other teacher throughout the state. Food. Anchorage, by the way, is used as the base, and it should be used as the base of all of these costs because it is lowest, and then you go from there. Food, it seems to be okay. In Anchorage, it's given away to 22, Fairbanks 24, Gateway 31. Transportation. Anchorage has got 17, Fairbanks 19, Alaska Gateway 21. Clothing. They give a weight of 0.08 to clothing in Anchorage and 0.07 to clothing in Fairbanks and 0.06 to clothing in Gateway. The assumption being is that Anchorage has more stores by which their teachers and personnel can go buy things, therefore they spend more money on clothes than the people do in Fairbanks or in Gateway. That is an assumption that they make, and I hope they're here because I want to get them to say it directly to you. Because you'll have to recognize that a lot of these things that they're projecting are not based upon a study of the actual costs that people spent. They did not have the data before them that said we spent 34% of our income on housing, we spent 8% of our income on clothing. There are some basic assumptions here that they had to make. Recreation. Anchorage spends 7% on recreation, whereas Fairbanks spends only 6%, and Gateway spends 4%. Anchorage has more recreational facilities available and more alternative recreation available to them. Therefore, their teachers and personnel spend more money on recreation than the teachers out in other areas of the state. That was an assumption they made, and that's not true. The worst one, I think, that I found was medical. They made an assumption that in rural Alaska, the personnel and teachers of the school districts utilized Alaska Native Health Service and Public Health Service more than the personnel and the teachers in Anchorage. And so they factored it and weighted in that manner. Under medical, they gave Gateway 0.05, they gave Anchorage 0.06, and they gave Fairbanks 0.05. In other words, they said because of that factor of Alaska Native medical, that it is more expensive for the teachers and the cost of education in Anchorage than it is for the school district Gateway. And that's not true. It may be for the students, because there are a lot of Native students, but the teachers don't use Alaska Native medical service. Either they can't qualify, or they have a better insurance program that might be through the school district. You take all of those factors and percentages, and you weigh them in that manner, and you skew the outcome of your study. It might be skewed 1%, 2%, or 3%. But what we intended, or what was originally intended, was that you could take the $200,000 that had been appropriated for this study, get true actual costs of what it costs to provide education in various parts of the state, and come out with something that was actual. And that's not what you have here. As a result of this skewing, what you have is a two-tiered system of providing education. You provide it at one level, primarily the urban areas, and because it's skewed and factored so heavily in one way, you provide a lower level of education out to rural Alaska. And I know that was not the intent, but that's what happens when you skew and weigh things. Thank you.
Representative Phillips.
John, I'm tracking on everything but the clothing and the recreational thing. I can see the clothing. Why don't you go through that thing again on clothing?
On clothing, they said that Anchorage spent 8%
right.
on clothing, 7% in Fairbanks, and 6% in the Gateway.
Okay.
Because I think you have more stores down there. It's not because the clothes cost anymore. It may be because that you have to have 5 suits, I don't know, and you don't necessarily have to have them in rural Alaska. But you have to have down parkas up there. I mean, there's certain things that I don't understand either. I can tell you, I come from Ruby, and I probably spend more than all of them on clothing, but it's not based upon actual. The other one that you had a concern was recreation. The people evidently in Gateway School District spend only one half of the dollar amount that the people in Anchorage spend. The personnel that work in the school districts in the Gateway School District spend 4%, the people in Anchorage School District spend 7%.
Right.
Recreation being, you know, going to the soccer games, hockey games, basketball games.
I'm buying every argument except for the last two, clothing and the
recreational. Yeah, I don't know.
Recreational.
That's the only thing that I can figure out. I may be incorrect there.
Okay, so you're living out in Gateway, and I'll use the code, on the clothing part. I mean, where are you going to buy it? Where are you going to buy your clothing? I mean, sure, there are places there, but it seems to me that a lot of these people come into town and then they go to the Northway Mall or Diamond Mall. And
well, in that case, then they should be spending the same amount as Anchorage people, which is 7%.
More for travel.
And more for travel.
Well, okay. Representative Kopanen.
Thank you, Senator Ryan. I tended to agree with you and did question. One of the facts they did find out was the number of degree days in each of the districts. However, they did not work that into the calculations, and the cost of heat and light during the cold periods is greater north of the range than south. I think that given the information they have already obtained, it would have been easy to crank in the numbers and figure that out. So I think, as you say, the information is very valuable. The methodology itself is not flawed. It's the assumptions that were used to in the calculations and the methodology. And I look on this as a good beginning, but like you say, no cigar yet.
No, and Mr. Chairman, I think the point I wanted to make out is that by doing the skewing, you might affect that 1 or 2%.